Lifelock.com.
Teaching and learning in a post-COVID world. Critical race theory. Howard Zinn, truth, banned? Yeah, there's a whole lot of crazy going on in today's classrooms. Where do you go for sanity? Maybe not here, but Busted Pencils Radio is here to soothe your anxiety. Now back to Tim, Johnny, and Busted Pencils Radio.
Oh, it is back to Tim and Johnny on Busted Pencils Radio, fully leaded education talk, educated educators talking education. And that is absolutely true tonight. Mitchell Robinson for stateschoolboard.org. Check out his website, Mitchell Robinson for stateschoolboard.org. Mitchell Robinson back. Okay, we got into a great concept or a content or a positiveness. We talk about teacher morale, teacher agency, music, arts, and I think all this stuff, Mitchell, when you come out as a candidate and you talk about the fact, when you said that teacher created materials, that really spoke to me in a way that says you're recognizing the reality of the teacher quote shortage, the teachers walking away, the teacher exodus is really an issue of deprofessionalization, taking away their agency. And then with that agency, then comes this idea of too, of teacher professional, of making decisions about curriculum, about content. No teacher would ever say, we don't have time for music. We don't have time for art. We don't have time. Those time mandates of what we have time for have been legislated upon the profession. So I know you're a music educator, and of course you want to have this, but your position, particularly if you go to Mitchell's website to check it out, again, Mitchell Robinson for stateschoolboard.org, you have this issue where you kind of lay out and say, look, STEM, you know, it's okay. What about STEAM, which for other people is to talk about arts and music. How do we put that in there? Mitchell, I mean, how profound would it be to empower teachers to talk about music and art and actually give them liberty to say, you have time. In fact, you have more than enough time.
Well, whenever I hear someone say you don't have time for something, what I hear is I don't value that thing. We find the time to do the things that we value. And as I said to you a few minutes ago, I see the narrowing of curriculum that's happened over the last decade plus as a clear kind of response of fear from political conservatives who are worried that if we produce a generation or two or three of critical thinkers, of people that are problem solvers, of kids that have a full and rich education that causes them to question things. I think that's what people are afraid of on the other side of the aisle. And I think that's why we've seen such a narrow and regressive focus on third grade math and reading tests as though they tell us anything at all. So I think that the antidote to this testing culture that we've had is a rich curriculum of diverse subjects. I'm not against anything. I'm not against math. I'm not against reading. I know how to add and I know how to read. I think those are good things. I think every child should learn them. But the idea that there are children in big cities or out in the country who haven't had access to an art teacher or a music teacher or whose physical education classes have been eliminated for time constraints, it makes me nauseous because those kids aren't experiencing every part of their lives. And we're not giving them a voice to be creative or to be expressive. We're turning school into a drone exercise for a lot of kids. So I don't think that it's fair. And it's not equitable. You know, where my wife and I live, every kid has music once or twice a week. Our kids played in band and orchestra and sang all the way through school. There were rich art classes. You know, it's educational inequity. It's malpractice for a kid 6 miles away from where I live to have had their elementary art and music programs canceled 6 years ago. That's just not right. I don't know anyone that thinks it's right, but I see a lot of people that feel that they've been forced to make tough decisions because of bad legislative leadership. So I feel like in my state, before we elected the three women who have been in charge of the state for the past couple of years on the Democratic ticket, I felt like we had been playing defense. You know, if we had a Democratic majority on the state school board, we played defense. And we have the opportunity, if we can flip some of these legislatures in Wisconsin and in Michigan and wherever, we can finally go on offense again. And the difference between our offense and the other side's offense is that we're trying to give people great experiences, great educational experiences, a rich, diverse education. We're trying to make them critical thinkers. We're trying to make them question us. We have no problem with that. The other side does.
I love that offense right there, Johnny Lupinacci. The idea of actually going on offense, and the offensive strategy is giving people things. Oh my God, God forbid we do that. Somebody, of course, will find something negative. But in education, so Mitchell Robinson, let's give students and teachers time. Let's show them we value them. I love that whole idea. What you have time for is what you actually value, and the value in that relationship with time. And here's that positive message of saying, if Democrats or if whoever wanted to truly care about public education, if the other side had to run on offense, they really don't have an offense other than being horribly, horrendously offensive in what they're pushing for.
Well, their offense is to privatize education and turn it into an ATM.
Which again, is not, like you just said, it's not an offense, right? So the offense for pro-public education to avoid, in fact, Mitchell, I think this has been part of the problem. Johnny could jump in. The offense, though, and you pointed this out when on break with Arne Duncan, it was almost as if there was a time when Democrats themselves didn't understand how to go on the offense about saying no more standardized testing, more art, more music, more recess, more funding. The more a child has less, the more that child gets more art and music. So the reverse, right? You know, the more poverty you come from, that means the more you get in public schools. The idea that you can run on that, I love that as an offense. Johnny, you comments, you know what I'm saying?
I do. And I think, you know, part of this is really important is that there is a matter of that you have to have a strategy, right? And I think offense, defense really helps us think through what direction the momentum of that strategy is going. And so I want to shift it, though, because it is also sad to think about, you know, the mere fact, I think, is that we're competing in not like Mitchell's arguing here, but like all of us have this context of which we're having to argue for or make the case for when there's been clear evidence for decades. Mm-hmm. We're making the case for a strong education system. It's nonpartisan, right? It should be a no-brainer. It shouldn't even be something we debate heavily, right? But it should be something that we come together consensus-wise on. And so, you know, that would be part of my adding to the offensive strategy is like whether we go into a full court press or a half court press or whatever it is, that part of it is also changing the game in terms of saying like maybe this is more of we figured out how we come together and provide a foundational experience. And I just want to back up too, because the language around it is, I think we give space to and credence to and value to what we might say is scientific literacy on what kind of education works, right? And that provides a public education opportunity for every kid, right? And that I like that. So I like that Mitchell's going to be able to bring that to the conversation and the thing. And we talked about it before, Tim, with other folks, whether we're talking about vaccines or we're talking about health issues, that overall our ability to bring scientific consensus, we can recognize multiple perspectives. We could say that there are opinions out there that say robots are better than our teachers. Sure, they exist, but what's scientific consensus? Let's get the educational researchers on board, and they show us with overwhelming evidence that a well-rounded curriculum, that time to good teachers, investment in good teachers is directly related to the success of all students, resources for those students as well. You know, Mitchell brought that up, how inequitably resourced our schools are. And so these are things that this is not new information, but raising awareness in the general public and in decision makers' views, right, is about bringing that scientific consensus to it. And also for our teachers out there, making sure young people who are going to be those future leaders understand how to value that kind of consensus.
Well, I think, you know, every time we see the other side of the aisle dabble into education policy, we see they reveal how little that they understand. So the latest bill in Florida, the Don't Say Gay bill, if you look at the actual text of that legislation, it mentions that things have to be age and developmentally appropriate for all children. And if we, you know, if we want to use their own language to kind of hoist them on their own petard, nothing about early childhood education right now is age or child development appropriate if it involves testing. That's not how children learn. Children learn by play. They don't learn by sitting down in a darkened room and taking a test on a computer or a paper and pencil. So, you know, I'm all for extracting that language out of those bills and actually having a discussion about what is developmentally appropriate, because educators know. Anyone that's taught a preschool classroom or a kindergarten classroom knows there are some things you do with young children and some things you don't do. And right now, from K-12, from pre-K-12 all the way through, teachers are having to do things that they know are not right. They know violate everything that they've learned. So I think our job as teacher educators is to provide kind of the bumpers. If you play, you know, pool or bowling, we're the bumpers. We're trying to produce teachers or help people become teachers that understand what a developmentally appropriate practice is. What are the right things that we should be doing for kids? What are the right kinds of subjects and learnings and environments and all that? And all we can do is keep on, you know, teaching our students what we know is best practice, and then hoping that we can get more teachers running for public office and that we can influence more of the current legislators that are out there to, as I said to you over the break, to reclaim the high ground about public education. Public education is the engine that has driven this country forward. And if we're going to give it up, I want something better in return. And so far, I've not seen it.
Man, the idea that you're, my goodness, you are a cool dude. I don't care what anybody says, Mitchell Robinson. You are a cool dude, smart dude, actually laying it out there.
Well, I see there's only 3 minutes left. If we're going to talk about how cool I am, can we extend the segment?
You're not that cool, man.
Okay.
Yeah. hold on in your coolness. But, you know, back again, though, to just laying this out. When you talk about what's best for kids, families, and communities, which I hear Mitchell Robinson for stateschoolboard.org running for, there's a positive message. How do you not get behind this? This is kind of like our friend Kevin Kumashiro, who always reminds us about reframing things so that people understand. Mitchell, you're not running against, you're running for families, you're running for children, you're running for teachers, you're running for all of the things that actually, when you ask somebody, unless they're a little bit on the odd side, are going to say, I want that for my kid, I want that for my family, I want that for my community. Wait a minute, why is this guy actually running to be elected on things that we should be doing, right? So how do we help our neighbors and people that are going to go out there and vote to recognize Mitchell's not against, he's for establishing what everybody, this is the other part, what everybody deserves, what every child deserves, whether it's a quality curriculum, whether it's a quality teacher, whether it's a well-funded school, whether it's materials, whether it's access to incredibly awesome teachers who are going to then themselves inspire their future students to become future teachers, so that we're not in, quote, a teacher shortage, teacher exodus mode. Mitchell Robinson, man. What a great guest, Mitchell. So I'm going to go to Mitchell Robinson for stateschoolboard.org. Anywhere else I should check out some of the stuff that we're running? Promo time for you here in this last minute. You know, where do we go? Where are we checking you out? Where are you going to be speaking next?
Well, I think I told you before, I've had 45 Zoom meetings with different political groups in the state in the run-up. Our state convention is on Saturday, the nominating convention. And then after that, I'm sure there will be, I've already started to book some, you know, public speaking kind of things. And I'm sure there's going to be interviews and debates. None as good as this, but there'll be some other kind of opportunities.
There we, Mitchell Robinson, our guest, my brother from another mother. Go check out his website, Mitchell Robinson for stateschoolboard.org. More Busted Pencil with Johnny Tim when we get back.
Yep. What if I never did believe? Would it be wrong if I decided I should leave?